Welcome to the Christian View Podcast. My name is Angela Roberts-Jones, and I am excited that you have tuned in. My hope is that you will be enlightened and encouraged by this view. Let's have a talk. Hello out there. Welcome back to part two of What's Love Got to Do With It? And I'm here with Mr. Isaac Spencer, who is the founder of Agape Multimedia Corporation, and we are having a conversation on love. And so as we pick up from where we left off from our first episode, we're looking at 1 Corinthians, the 13th chapter, which is known as the love chapter. Verse 4 through 7 reads, love suffers long and is kind. Love does not envy. Love does not parade itself. It's not puffed up, does not behave rudely, does not seek its own kind. It is not provoked, thinks no evil, does not rejoice in iniquity, but rejoices in the truth, bears all things, believes all things, hopes all things, and endures all things. So would you say, Isaac, as we continue with this conversation, that love is action? Is it enough to just say, I love you, I love you, I love you? I mean, how does a person know that they are loved?
Love is an action. And just saying the words is good and is confirming, but love has to be more than just saying the words. Is actually showing, is doing the things that show the people that you really love them. And just to wrap it up, it's an action word. Mm-hmm. And I think it should be shown.
Mm-hmm. Yes. So love, I mean, just like God demonstrated his love to us, you know, Romans 5th chapter, the 8th verse says, God demonstrated his love by sending his son, Jesus Christ, to die on the cross while we were yet sinners. In other words, you know, he didn't wait for us to be perfect, to fulfill any, of course, there are requirements to being a Christian, but he didn't wait for us to be perfect or perfected before he sent his son. So he demonstrated his love, you know, to us by making that sacrifice. And likewise, if we use that as an example, there are ways that we demonstrate that love, you know. So even going back to 1 Corinthians, the 13th chapter, where even in verse 4, where it says love suffers long and is kind, you know, in other words, you know, love doesn't hold back. When you say that love gives, you know, if you really love somebody, you don't hold back what would either nurture them or nurture the relationship. You don't hold back what would make them a better person. You don't hold back what you could do for them, and you don't hold yourself back. What do you think about that? Isaac, is that too deep?
No, I'm sorry. No, I think love is not in itself perfect between two people. Mm-hmm. And that's the great thing about it, because you have two different people. And I think when they love each other, I think they continually grow and continue to strengthen their love. Mm-hmm. And it's not, and even though it's not perfect, it can still be love. And it can still be something that can continue to grow and to blossom into something beautiful.
Mm-hmm. Yes, because, you know, as we further like expound on that scripture, you know, perfect love really casts out fear, which means that if you are in a relationship where you are constantly suspicious of a person's motives, are you suspicious of their heart or their feelings for you, then you are really not practicing love, you know, because that love is patient and that love is kind. And so divine love, when it comes to the love that God gives us, that agape love, that means that we want the other person to flourish. We want them to grow and to achieve. And then not only that, that's what we want for that, our relationship, to grow, to flourish, to be positive. You know, love is not arrogant. you don't think more highly of yourself than you ought to, or even higher than the other person that you claim to love. So love requires like concessions, sometimes compromising. Wouldn't you say so? That love is not selfish, it's not narcissistic, you know?
Right. 'Cause I think it makes it a whole lot easier when it's not selfish and when it's not some of the things that one person is getting more than the other. I think sometimes that's why even counseling is great for couples when one has maybe problems with trust, or they have problems with maybe a previous relationship. Mm-hmm. But I think it all can be great and it can make it all better.
Mm-hmm. Yes, because and it's something that you did mention that about the counseling, because it is important, or having a third party, or even couples and even friends have mentors and other people that walk alongside them to help them learn how to love and be and to interact with others. So because love is not rude, it's not overbearing, it doesn't take personal offense. Love is devoted to truth. You know, you can't operate in a relationship if you don't have the courage, the patience, or the time to see things as they are. And sometimes we need people to help us understand how to operate like that. You know, sometimes that can be words on paper. So that is really, really, really so true. But that doesn't mean that love allows destructive or abusive behaviors to go unchecked. Wouldn't you say?
Yes. Yes. It's just something that I think in a relationship, I think that those lines have to be drawn and understood and grown and, you know, cultivated mm-hmm. in a relationship. Mm-hmm.
Yes, yes. So love, just to add on to that, another layer to that, love protects, you know, so not just the person, but love protects the relationship, you know. You do those things that are positive, even, let's say, positive, negative. Because if you're honest and truthful with someone, it may not always be pleasant to tell the truth, you know. And sometimes there are arguments, disagreements, conflicts, you know. But if you love somebody, then you'll love them enough to work through it and patiently work through it. Ephesians, the fourth chapter says, be angry and sin not. Don't let the sun go down on your wrath, and neither give place to the devil, because that's when things fall apart, when we don't stop to face and confront the conflict. Wouldn't you say?
Yes. Yes, I agree with that.
Mm-hmm. Totally. So even in that 1 Corinthians 13, it says love endures what others reject, you know. But you made a point earlier that it takes two people, you know. You both have to cooperate with that, even in friendships, you know, even in brother and sister, mother and father, you know, family relationships. You have to cooperate with each other in order to take that to another level, or for your relationship to flourish. Okay. So 1 Peter 4:8 says, and above all things, have fervent love for one another, for love will cover a multitude of sins. You know, fervent means to be enthusiastic, to be devoted, to have affection, you know, expressive love for one another. And of course, they're speaking here of brotherly love as well. But wouldn't you say, Isaac, that even in, say, even a marriage or something like that, boyfriend, girlfriend, that we need all types of love, that even, you know, I wouldn't say brotherly love, but we use the term agape love, you know, just respecting that person for who they are, you know, doesn't matter who they are. But love will cover a multitude of sins, which means that we're not picking out everybody's flaws, picking out their flaws.
Right. So like even if your maybe your spouse does have problems, I know a kind word could actually change the way that somebody feels about their flaws. Mm-hmm. So like if somebody has a scar or whatever, maybe somebody in the past would talk bad about their scar. But if you say, "I love you with your imperfections," or "I love everything about you," I think that changes the way people feel and also increases and strengthens the love that you have.
Yes, I agree with that, because when you love someone, you will help them work through their faults, don't you think? You know, because love forgives. You know, once you point out something to someone, especially, well, first of all, let me say this. We have to allow human beings to be human. So there are times that we're just not going to always say the right thing, make the right decisions, make the right choices. We don't always respond like we should because we have faults, not just faults. Sometimes you're just tired. There are physical things going on, job, responsibility, stress. And then sometimes we just don't know or understand some things. So that we bring all of that to the relationship. But when you love someone and you bring those things to their attention, then we patiently work with them or wait with them, work with them, wait with them as they make changes, as they grow, because we're always changing.
And then also love forgives, right?
Yes, absolutely. That's my next, what I was about to say next. What do you think about forgiveness?
I think a lot of times, and I'll say for guys, sometimes we can do things and say things that that can be hurtful to the one we love. But I think in growing together and learning more about each other, I think at some point we have to forgive when someone says something that maybe hurts you, or when they do something that maybe you didn't appreciate. But for the love to continue to grow, I think there are times that you need to forgive in order for our love to progress to the next level.
So for a guy, since you said guy, for a guy, what would it look like if you, how would you know? And I know everybody, different people are wired differently, but in general, what do you think men need when it comes to being forgiven and shown patience to?
For them to show patience
For them to receive. Thank you for that clarity. For you to receive that patience and forgiveness.
I think the communication is key. And I sometimes like with guys, they might not want to seem weak in certain areas. So, hold on a second. So, you know, there were things that they might not want to say because maybe they might feel weak to their spouse. Mm-hmm. But I think at times, if we're going to let our love grow and we're going to do more to be closer, I think we have to accept our weaknesses and then allow our spouse to be there for us.
That's good, and that's well said. And I think the same is true with women. But I think for women, one of the key things, you know, there are two elements to the communication. You know, one speaks, one listens. Sometimes we speak, or we're in a position where not necessarily to speak, but to understand. I think for women, just being able to vent and having their spouse or having someone to listen to what they have to say or what we have to say is just really huge, because women are wired differently, and sometimes we need to let it out. Whereas men, may, although they need to let it out, they can hold it in a little longer. They seem to do better with that in general than women, wouldn't you say?
Oh, sorry.
Yeah.
Which sometimes that's not the most healthy thing for relationship.
Mm-hmm.
Because the other person might not know things that you're struggling with.
Mm-hmm.
And if it goes, you know, too long without being checked or realized, it can be a problem.
Yes, and I think you made a valid point there, because there are people that you look even across America where you hear of people that have been married 30, 40 years, and they find themselves divorcing. And some of the things that have been said is that, well, I didn't know how they felt. I didn't know this was going on. How did this happen? After that long, you know, do you think that that communication piece has a lot to do with that?
I think the communication piece is huge. Because I know some people have actually stayed married until the kids were gone.
Mm-hmm.
And it was because something in the marriage was actually missing. And I think if they would have came together and either got counseling or got some type of mediator to help pull out those things that were really bothering them, I think that those things could have been fixed.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's things that the person would have probably just expressed how much things bothered them, and then they could have fixed it, like I said before.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes even with the things that have been held, sometimes either the kids or the children pick up on those things, and sometimes they also, you know, have the same issues.
Mm-hmm.
So like if dad never told you that he loved you,
mm-hmm.
then a lot of times the kids will grow up and they might not express that love that they have for their spouse or, you know, even their brothers and sisters.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that it has to come out. It has to be expressed.
Yeah, that is so true. And that's key, because kids live what they see. And likewise, if they have not heard the terms "I love you" or not seen it expressed, for instance, hugging, you know, touching, physical touch, I think that's important for kids to receive that. So when we become adults, we know that that's something that you do. You know,
right.
And I mean non-sexual touches, hugs, affection, you know, learning to do that is so important. And body language, looking people in the face, you know, and just having a conversation. So I think that's true. And then sometimes people learn, children learn that love, if they see their parents arguing and the husband or wife, you know, they sleep downstairs, you know, this week, and next week they're in the bedroom, and, you know, that type of thing, you know, withholding from one another. I don't think that's a good way to show kids or to demonstrate how to work through conflict. What do you think?
Right. Mm-hmm. Right. Like, I'll give an example of my parents. My parents, actually, they were married 50 years before my mom passed.
Mm-hmm.
And my whole entire life, I never saw them argue. Mm-hmm. And I'm not saying that they never argued or they never had disagreements, but that was something that they never let us see. They never displayed the arguments, the being mad at each other and stuff like that, because that's something that they always wanted to maintain, to where if they had disagreements or issues, they kept it between them two, mm-hmm. the two of them. Yeah.
And that's good, because that's my experience as well. My parents, I never saw my parents just like argue in front of us, you know. I mean, they might have talked about certain things and you could tell maybe mama didn't agree with it, but we didn't, our daddy didn't agree, you know, but we had to kind of figure it out because they were so respectful of one another, you know, in front of us. So you're absolutely right about that. That has a lot to do with how we interact in our adult life. You know, so when you're working with a person and working with their faults, love does forgive. And love will patiently take a day at a time as progress is made, you know, through intentional work on the emotions, actions, and anything unhealthy to the relationship and to each other, because love values the relationship. So we talked about the fact that love comes from the heart, that love is sincere, love is demonstrated, love is action. Love is also faithful and loyal, because Proverbs 17 and 17 says that a friend loves at all time. And Proverbs 26 through 7 says many claim to have unfailing love, but a faithful person who can find. So when you look at those two scriptures, you know that it's so important if somebody loves you or if we love someone to display that faithfulness and loyalty to one another. But I want to kind of move, take a few more minutes to move to another section, you know, that's so important. Ephesians, the fifth chapter. I'm not going to read the whole thing, but it's the 20th verse through the 33rd verse. You know that verse where it says, wives, submit yourselves to the husband, and husbands, love your wives. You know, this is one of the most confusing verses to many people because they, because of the key, because of the words submission and the words husband, love your wives. But it says, love your wives as Christ loved the church and gave himself up for the church. But that particular section ends with, wives, respect your husbands. And so it talks about the fact that they live as one flesh. So, what do you think one flesh is? What does it mean? You know, and this is not a textbook definition, but what's one flesh? What do you think one flesh means?
I think it's the communication, and it's where each one has like flaws, and you know they have things that one might not be strong in, but there are things that the other one may be weak. So I think when if you go on one flesh, I think that means to me is that you're actually going as a team, and what is it? Three short cord is not easily broken, but yeah. But I just believe that that when you are together like that, then I believe there's strength, and that shows ultimate love as well.
Yes, and you know, with this, sometimes the just the word submission and husband loving your wives, you know, as Christ loved the church, one of the things that I see when it comes to being that one flesh and coming together as a team, which is so important. I love that word, being a team. When the fact that Christ loved the church, he gave us still freedom to make choices. We have a certain path. All of us have a path that God has laid out, and we just, husband and wife, come together to bring those paths together to achieve their goals, but they're working together to achieve those goals, and then they start to build something. You know, my father coached football, so I think about this all the time when it comes to teamwork. And you think about the fact that you have the quarterback, you have the running back, and you know, you have the one that's on defense. I mean, they all are awesome, and they have these gifts and talents, and they come together to play a game and to win. But everybody's doing their part. So the same thing is true in this husband and wife team. You know, God has a purpose and a plan for us individually as husband and wives. But then when you bring that together, what can you achieve together? You know, So when the husband loved your wife as Christ loved the church and he gave himself up to her, really what that submission means is that a wife submits to that love. You know, the wife yields to the love that the husband has for her. And so it's so important for the husband to properly love the wife and for the wife to submit to that love, whatever else that entails. You know, that we would have to do that on another podcast, because that could be a whole whole podcast in itself, you know, to go through that and explain that. But no, wouldn't you think so?
Yes, but I think the submit is not like, okay, you have to be under his foot.
Right.
And you have to do everything that he says, no matter if it's right or wrong, you're his, you're under him.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think as a team, I think you are his support. And I think there's a natural progression the way God has set up the family, both physically and spiritually.
Mm-hmm.
So I think sometimes you have to be careful how you interpret scripture.
Mm-hmm.
and really understand what God is saying in that particular scripture.
Mm-hmm. I agree with that, and that is so key. And I'm glad you brought out that point, because even as a woman myself, I've had a professional career and educated and things that I love to do in my life. You know, I certainly agree with you that it does not mean that you just totally forget yourself and forget who you are, you know, and be follow the man around and, you know, whatever he may need. Well, I mean, there are degrees of serving now. You know, we can cook and serve. I don't see anything wrong with that. Now, don't get me wrong, ladies. I just thought I would throw that in, you know, and we should do that and honor, you know, your mate. But certainly, if God has created you for a certain purpose, then we need to fulfill that. And that's what you're saying, right, Isaac?
Right. Mm-hmm. Right. And at the same time, the man should honor the wife.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yes. And, you know, to add to that, and I'm just going to touch on this because we're kind of running close to time, to add to that marital love, in the book of the Song of Solomon, this is an example of Eros love, you know, where he actually talks about this strong desire that he has for his wife, his mate, you know. That's so important and key in a relationship as well, a marital relationship, because you need to be attracted physically, mentally, emotionally. It's all right to be, you know, compassionate and passionate, along with the respect, the value, esteem, you know, appreciation of one another, loyalty and faithfulness and sacrifice for one another. You still need to honor that marriage in a physical way. That's important. That's how we procreate. Amen. That's how we procreate. So that's a part of it. But, you know, I want to kind of move to a close with two particular things. There's an example of Will Smith and his wife Jada, but before giving that example, there are some barriers that set up. We've spoken in a pretty general manner about love and various levels of love and different relationships, but Joy Bell, Miss Joy Bell made this comment that we have to allow ourselves to be loved by the people who really love us and the people who really matter. Too much of the time, we are blinded by our own pursuits of people to love us, people that don't even matter, while all that time we waste and the people who do love us have to stand on the sidewalk and watch us beg in the streets. It's time to put an end to this. It's time to let ourselves be loved. So, you know, when I read that quote, of course, you know, going beyond the agape love and loving those who, for instance, the homeless and the helpless and the hopeless, you know, being an advocate and helping those in our community, there are some barriers such as past wounds. You know, maybe we've had bad relationships or we've had other trauma in our life. There's lack of trust because of these wounds, dysfunctional families, and sometimes we don't have those examples like you and I spoke of our parents. You know, those are good examples. And how we, the type of household that we grew up in, even our interaction with our siblings. And then there's selfishness, and then there's unrealistic expectations. You know, that can create a wall because we expect something of people that they cannot be or that they don't have. And then not knowing God and receiving His love and forgiveness, His blessings and His provisions, all of that can play a key in building up a wall to receiving love. Wouldn't you think?
Yes. Those are some that I've actually have experienced myself in relationships. Mm-hmm. So it's definitely areas that would need to be addressed.
Mm-hmm. Yes, and that is so true. You know, I've seen even myself as I get older and learn things about myself, you know, in my experiences, you know, trauma can play just a big part, you know, having crisis in your life, you know, can kind of block your emotions somewhat until you get through certain things. It's really better not to make some decisions when you're in a vulnerable state, wouldn't you say?
Yes, totally.
Mm-hmm.
Totally.
Yes.
I think it comes with wisdom, huh?
Yes, absolutely. You have to know yourself.
Right.
Be true to yourself. And so I want to close with this example and a few other closing thoughts. I heard this video, and many of you out there who are listening today might have seen this video that's floating around on social media. And it's an interview with Will Smith as he speaks about a conversation he had with his wife, Jada. And I think this is really, really a good example of loving someone and allowing them to be who God ordained them to be. And let me give a disclaimer here to say that I don't know exactly, I'll say the faith beliefs of Will Smith and Jada, and that's kind of irrelevant right now because sometimes you'll have people who say, well, they don't know the Lord. Well, you know, I just had to throw that in there. Is that all right? You know, but still we see ways that people live out. We see examples of how people live out biblical principles. And so Will Smith says that in a conversation with his wife, Jada, he said that they realize you cannot make a person happy. You can make a person smile. You can make them feel good, but to make a person happy deeply, deep in their soul, is utterly out of your control. So after sharing a laugh about this, he made the statement to Jada, I retire from trying to make you happy. You need to make yourself happy. So then they shared a laugh in agreement. And this is, I'm quoting what he said, you know, kind of paraphrasing what he said in this video. So he continued to say that they came into a false romantic concept that when they got married, they would become inseparably one. But what they realized was that they were two separate individuals with two individual journeys that were choosing to walk their separate journeys together. So they decided that Jada decided that her happiness was her responsibility. And Will Smith decided that his happiness was his responsibility. And they decided together they would find their individual, internal, private, separate joy and then present themselves already happy to the relationship and to each other already happy. So they decided that it was unfair to bring an empty cup to each other and demand that the other person fill it up. And they decided that this was unfair and unrealistic. And so after really thinking about that, I just think that is so true. That's profound. Because the only way, if we really look at the Christian view, you know, God created us and he created us in his image. And when we were born really alone. And God has laid out a path for each one of us. So when two people intersect in life, whether it's friends, husband and wife, or whatever, when you intersect in life, I think it's our responsibility at some point to understand who we are in God and to pursue that and to communicate that to our mates and to people in our life. What do you think, Isaac? How do you feel about that?
I agree with what you said. That was a lot to take in.
There's a lot of thinking.
There's a lot to take in right there.
That's pretty deep, though, isn't it?
Yeah, that was really deep.
Yes.
Right.
Yes. So we have a responsibility, you know, at some point, and that comes with maturity because we can't always articulate. I know when I was a younger person, you know, I didn't always know how to articulate who I was. All I could do was say who I, what I desired at that time. You know, even a year ago, I've grown in a year. And so in just a year of changing and transformation, I can articulate something different. But I think what I'd like to encourage our audience, or what I'd like to leave with them is that when it comes to love, you know, we love the Lord with all of our heart, our mind, and our strength, and you love your neighbor as yourself. This is what Jesus commanded us to do. And in order to love each other as ourselves, then that means we have to know who we are, appreciate how God made us, appreciate our own purpose and plan, you know, celebrate myself, celebrate who you are, you know, embrace your flaws, embrace your weaknesses, work on them, make yourself a better person in every way that you can so that we can present ourselves to God and present ourselves to others. So what's love got to do with it? Love's got everything to do with it. Without love, nothing else matters. So that concludes our episode of What's Love Got to Do with It. I hope you have enjoyed this session. Thank you so much for listening. Thank you so much for spending time with us on the Christian View. So please go and share the love. And let me give a shout out to our guest today, Isaac Spencer. Thank you, Isaac.
You're welcome. Thanks for inviting me. This has been great.
Yes, it has. So thank you so much. So let me say to our audience, please go and share the love. See you next time. Thank you for listening to the Christian View Podcast. I am so glad you joined us. Please share this podcast with your friends and family. We would love to hear your feedback. You can contact us on the web at www.thechristianview.org or the Christian View Facebook page or via Twitter and Instagram at pastor_ARJ. We look forward to hearing from you. God bless.